further ado, I'd like to introduce our main speaker tonight, Brittany.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Brittany.
Brittany, and I'm an adult children of alcoholics, and I'm really quite nervous, but also glad to be here tonight and happy to have this opportunity to be sharing my story with all of you. Can I give you this back? Yes. So let's see, where to begin? I guess I just want to start by saying that I didn't come to this program willingly. Like I've heard a lot of people say about 12-step programs, I came here on my knees. I came here because my life had reached a point where it had become completely unmanageable, and I knew that I could not go on living the way that I had been living up until this point, and that something had to change. And there were a couple different things that led me to that feeling. One of them was that I'd just gone through a three-week treatment program in Germany for Lyme disease. So my mom contracted Lyme disease when she was in her late 20s, and the doctors believed that she gave it to my brother and I in utero. So I had done a lot of research on treatments. We'd been, you know, undergoing treatments for 10 years, different types of them, and I felt really strongly about this doctor in Germany, that he was going to be the person who would really be able to help us. And the treatment just left me totally stripped in the best and the worst way possible. But it was like a blanket had been pulled off my head, and I was seeing myself in my life for the first time. So I came home from that in a pretty terrible state, and it was clear after my first ACA meeting that I just like literally dragged myself into that I was in the right place. Everything that I heard read on that meeting just, it was like, I know people say this all the time, but it was like people were speaking my story. It's like they were speaking my family and my history. And it was comforting, but it was also friggin' terrifying. I'll tell you just a little bit about my family. So I grew up in an extremely dysfunctional home and generations of dysfunction and alcoholism. Both my parents came from alcoholic and abusive families. My dad used to say that he had this antenna, this radar, and he'd walk into a party and he'd just put up his radar and he'd find the women who were the alcoholics in the room. And those are the ones that he wanted to date and he wanted to be with. you know, I mean, just over and over again. That's how he would describe it. My dad was such a wonderful codependent. so perfect, taught me so much. So he was the perfect fit for my mom. And my mom also grew up in a dysfunctional household with a mother who was alcoholic and a father who was alcoholic. And my mom actually ended up becoming a family marriage therapist specializing in drug addiction and alcohol abuse. Now, all the while she was drinking alcoholically. Now, other people might find this ironic, but with what we know in this program about the family system and the way that the dysfunction is passed down over the generations, this really, you know, is no surprise at all. And my mom wanted nothing more than to heal her family, than to fix her family. And she wanted nothing more than to help her parents and teach her parents how to love her in the way that she wanted and needed to be loved. And I believe that part of the reason she had me was because she really wanted the chance to do it over again. She wanted the chance to do it right and to do it differently, and she wanted somebody in her life who would be there for her unconditionally, who would always love her. And would always take care of her. And In that way, I was really brought into this world with a very clear purpose. And I was very aware of my purpose. from quite a young age, she has a story about standing in the kitchen, staring out the window, feeling really depressed and really alone, and I walked up behind her. I was 4 years old, and I looked up and said, "Sometimes, Mom, you know, sometimes I feel like a little boat that's lost at sea." And she looked down at me and said, "No, honey, that's my feeling." Clearly, there was just so much entanglement. I couldn't figure out where I ended and she began, where she ended and I began. And this became really apparent when we were in Germany also. I brought her out here to go through this treatment, and at the end of the 3 weeks, the doctor retested her for Lyme disease, and her test came back negative, said that you don't have the disease or the co-infections of it. And upon hearing that news, I burst into tears. I burst into tears, and I started uncontrollably shaking. And this was a surprise to me, too. I wasn't planning on having that reaction. But it became really clear, and then he tested me afterwards, and I had also tested negative, but that didn't matter. What mattered is that she had, so I felt like I'd finally finally fulfilled my purpose. I'd finally cured her, and now I could look at myself. And so I think there was an energy shift that sort of went on there. And then I got back from Germany, and I was left with, okay, now I have the chance to look at myself, but who the hell am I? Who am I? What is this self? And I think it was one of the nights that I was just lying in physical pain, and I had this overwhelming feeling that my life didn't belong to me, that my life had never belonged to me. It belonged to my mom growing up, and then it belonged to a string of alcoholic boyfriends, and then it belonged to my friends. I have really amazing friends, and I'm really quite a wonderful codependent person who's very eager to please. And it's amazing how those codependent traits are so well accepted in our society. they're aged in a lot of ways. And they really serve one very well in a business environment, because here I am able to very strategically navigate the needs and the wants and the feelings of all those around me internally. And I also got myself into a job for a great nonprofit organization, but my role is to manage the donors, our donor relationships. So I'm constantly anticipating, what do you need? What do you want? I got it for you. I already have shown up with it. Which was great, it was serving me, but it was just sort of perpetuating this inability for me to know or act for myself or as myself. And I just kept feeling, having this overwhelming feeling that my life wasn't mine and I didn't belong to myself. And I felt like my entire life I had kind of been living this lie. I'd been building this castle, glass kind of castle of what everyone else wanted and needed and expect me. And throughout 2 months in this party, those walls were just shattering because I was becoming aware of it. So it was just crumbling down around me. And I think that it was about this that I admitted that I was powerless and that my life had become unmanageable. And these are the moments that I really hit my bottom, but this was also the time when I found my higher power. Because, I found it really out of total necessity. But I realized that, I found my higher power because I had no choice but to believe that something greater than me existed. I had no choice but to believe that after, this facade came crashing down around me, that something and someone would be there to take care of me. And that was my higher power. And it came to me first just as light, which surrounded me, and it felt really comforting and really nurturing. And I started being able to kind of turn into it and started to be able to turn over my physical pain to it, and was surprisingly feeling better the next day after being able to do that. And of course, I had to do it over and over and over again. I learned right away that once you discover your higher power doesn't really stick around. You have to keep accessing it. You know, you have to keep turning to it and using it. So that was a good lesson. But something that I learned then about 4 or 5 months in, and became pretty clear to me after all of these kind of bottom crashes, was that I really needed to sever the relationship between my parents. I needed to cut off all contact with them, because this program is about going back and being able to discover, you know, the dysfunctional and unhealthy roles and behaviors and coping mechanisms that we developed in childhood to live in this dysfunction. And there was no way that I could do that. I was still interacting with my mom and my dad on a regular basis, and I was. You know, I was going to my mom for everything. And so I needed to stop. And I was able to write an email to my parents explaining this and explaining that I needed to take this time to really to belong to myself and to really find out who myself was. And my dad responded immediately and said, "Makes perfect sense, honey. I love you, you know, and I'm here for you." And my mom was just silence, just radio silence, you know, which was a little tough. And I had this fear, of course, that she was just going to appear on my doorstep. She's just going to show up one day from Northern California. And she used to always say that she was going to rent an Airstream and park it in my driveway so she could be close to me always, close to me and my husband. She would say that she wanted my haircut, she wanted my friends, she wanted to do the things that we did together. On my wedding day, she said that she was very jealous of me because I got to be the center of attention on this day. And at least she was honest, you know. But what this space allowed me to do for the first time in my life was to feel anger, was to be really angry at her and really angry at my parents. And it was a new feeling for me. I mean, in one of my first meetings, I pulled the stick that said anger on it, and I had no idea what to say. Like, I don't know. Anger didn't really exist for me. My mom raged around the house, blaming the dog and my dad and us for moving things that she was clearly losing. And I would kind of follow around, picking up the pieces and going along with this game, you know, when I knew that she had really misplaced things. But I finally got to be mad at her, and I hated her. I got to get out all of this hate and this rage over her owning my life for that period of my childhood. And I told my higher power how much I hated her. And one of the lines that I love about this program is, we came to see our parents as the biological instruments of our existence, and our true parent was our higher power. And I would visualize myself with this line of light that went into the sky. And then I'd visualize my parents over there in Northern California as themselves with their line of light into the sky, and we would be on equal playing fields. You know, we'd be on the same playing field. And then I'd envision this line that went between me and my parents, and I'd just cut it in my head, you know, and I was just severing it and cutting it and taking big, you know, clippers. And over again, I think there was something obviously that was kind of valuable about me walking through this visualization, you know, of really letting go of them, really cutting off my ownership to them. And I think it was really at this point that I made the decision to turn my will and my life over to the power of God. And from now on, my relationship was between me and my higher power. And another thing that this allowed me to do then was to see my parents as, you know, now that these two crazy people weren't actually my parents, they were just people, you know, doing their own thing over here on equal playing fields, I could have perspective on them. So I was able to understand, I was able to have compassion and to understand the childhoods that they grew up in. And I realized that they really did love my brother and I fiercely. And, you know, I think I'm one of the lucky ones, because my parents did love me, and they did tell me, you know, they showed up physically for me, and they told me that they loved me. And in a couple of my meetings, I was very confused because if they loved me, why did I have this deep feeling of not being enough, you know, being so unworthy? And I happened to be reading the book, The Biology of Belief, and in it, he explains that there are two ways that we develop our sense of self, our kind of subconscious programmed self, and those ways when we're a child, and those ways are through what is told to you by other people. So what my parents, what my mom always told me was that I had learning disabilities and that I had to try much harder than the people sitting next to me to be just as good as them, and that it was always going to be difficult. I was always going to struggle in life. And these were the things that were true for her life. And she, I think she wanted to prepare me, you know, and she wanted to tell me that that's just the way life is and that's okay. You just have to work 10 times as hard. So of course, that's what I believed, you know, that I wasn't as good as those around me and always had to work harder than everyone to meet that standard. And then the other way that we learn about we build our sort of subconscious self and identity is through watching the parents, the people around us. And I watched my mom and my dad have so much self-hate and so much, so many feelings of unworthiness themselves. And whether it was my mom criticizing her haircut every single time she came back, you know, from the hairdresser, or literally saying things like, I'm stupid, I'm so stupid, you know, why did I do that? I got built the understanding that that's how you treat yourself. You know, and this is kind of, I think, what led to my feeling, the feeling in me that just in my very nature, I was flawed. And what was so comforting during that time was just realizing it, you know, being able to realize it, and then being able to come to a room with so many people every time I came to a meeting who felt the exact same way. So here I had been thinking that I was so isolated in this feeling, and I kept showing up to meetings, and I kept hearing that other people felt that way too. So that was really what gave me hope, and I was doing a lot of positive affirmations at that time, so telling myself before bed that I am worthy and I deserve to be healthy. I deserve nothing but the best in this life, and I'm now willing to lovingly allow myself to receive those things. So I was repeating this to myself constantly, and I felt as though I was starting to build a little self. You know, I was starting to build a sense of self. And even the fact that I'd asked for that space from my parents and cut them off showed me that the program was working, because I was starting to have a self, you know, that was worthy of really developing. And then kind of moving on from that in the story, one of the most valuable things I've really learned from this program too is how to grieve, and is the importance of grieving, that actually releasing those emotions are how we become free of them. And after all of my self-exercises and having separated from my parents, I started all of a sudden having a lot of memories of my college boyfriend and this college relationship that I had, which was really frustrating considering I had done just about everything I could to black out that period in my life. And ACA has a really great, a great knack for digging up those things that you think you've shoved so far, you know, under the rug that they're never going to come out again. So it was really frustrating that I was thinking about him all the time, just thinking about him over and over again. And he was an alcoholic and very verbally abusive man. He used to tell me that I was stupid and that I should just go kill myself, which is always great to hear. And I think that in many ways, my relationship with him was an exaggerated version of my parents' relationship, of the hate, the shame, the blame, the criticizing and anger that they had for one another. It's like I'd kind of acted that out through my college relationship. And one night I had a dream about him. I had a dream that I had a baby with my husband now, who is a really wonderful and kind and compassionate man. But after the baby was born, this college boyfriend stepped in to raise the baby with me. And it was like I woke up, you know, with just having been like the air knocked out of me, feeling like, oh my God, here we have this innocent, new, you know, pure child, and I'm going to raise it with him and with my dynamic with him. And it was just absolutely devastating. And so I went to a meeting and I shared it in the meeting because I didn't know what else to do and I had to get it off of my chest. And then on the car ride home from that meeting, I had a visualization of walking with my husband now on State Street, and we bumped into this boyfriend. And immediately the boyfriend started going into all these terrible things and criticizing me and putting me down. And I faced him directly and I said, I'm sorry for the role that I played in our relationship, and I forgive you, but you can't hurt me anymore. And with that, he kind of faded off. And then I turned to my husband, who was standing next to me, and was just so visibly upset and hurt by the fact that I'd allowed myself to be treated this way. And I said to my husband, I'm so sorry that I allowed myself to be treated that way. Please forgive me. And then I kind of was jolted out of this vision and realized that the person who I really needed to forgive was myself. that I actually had to forgive myself for allowing myself to be treated that way for all those years. And I had to apologize to myself, you know? And then I just cried. I just broke down and I cried. But I really felt as though I had a self that was asking for forgiveness now, you know? And in this program, I've heard people talk about how actually able to go back and heal past generations. And this is exactly what had happened. You know, I was able to heal this past period in my life. And it really taught me the power of forgiveness, which brought me back to my mom, who got into AA when she was, when I was about 11. And she was always asking for my forgiveness. She was working the AA program. She had a sponsor. She stopped drinking. And she was becoming really aware of her inappropriate and hurtful behaviors. The problem was that she couldn't stop doing them. She couldn't change the behavior before she did them. But she was aware of doing it afterwards. So for a lot of my teenage years, she would do something. And then 10 minutes later, she'd come back to me and say, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. That never gave me the chance, of course, to have a feeling about it, to be angry, because here she was being totally inappropriate, and then coming back so so upset by what she'd done and asking for my forgiveness. So I always gave it. I had endless forgiveness and endless compassion and endless love for her, you know? And what I realized through my experience with forgiveness is that I could forgive my mom with every last breath that I had in my body, and that would still never be enough because she was unwilling to forgive herself. And that's essentially what we had been doing our entire lives, is her trying to fill the hole that she has inside of her with me, and me trying to be enough to fill that hole. And this was such a powerful realization because all of a sudden my role became completely non-existent. I served no purpose anymore. I realized that I absolutely served no purpose, and that cutting off from her was, of course, the best thing that I could do, but not only for me, but for her, because she was, for the first time, able to turn inward to herself and start forgiving herself, and she actually is an ACA, too, back in the Bay Area, so she's doing all of those things. I think that was a really incredible discovery and turning point. And I'm speaking to my mom again once a week, and to my dad, and have been able to heal a lot of that relationship. And it's still a challenge, of course, and I'm still having to constantly find my boundary and stand up for myself. But I'm able to have a relationship with her again, which is such an incredible gift. And I'm able to have that relationship as myself, as my true self. And another thing I wanted to touch on was the inner child, which is a big component of this program. And my inner child is something that I've had a very difficult time with. I was very angry at my inner child and very resentful of her. I was angry at the fact that she was so young and so helpless and so vulnerable, and she'd let herself be so abused, you know, and hurt. And every time I would have a childish feeling or thought or emotion come up, I would immediately put it down and immediately distance myself from it. And I think one of the reasons, of course, was that my mom acted so childish my whole life, so needy and so emotionally immature that I was always the one who was taking care of her. And even when we were in Germany, we'd have moments where she was looking out the window and kind of waving her hands like this, and I'd just be sitting in the seat next to her like, calm down, behave yourself, and be socially appropriate, for God's sakes, you know. And she even said to me at some point, God, you really don't know how to have any fun, you know. You don't know how to relax and have any fun. And I was feeling like that was a rude criticism, but... But it was entirely true. I didn't, you know. I'm very rigid and I'm very kind of disciplinary of myself, most especially. And one night in meditating, I asked myself, what is it that bothers you? Or maybe my higher power asked me. One of us did. We're kind of one and the same at times. And my meditating is me just sort of flopping around on the floor, because I can't sit still. But one night when I was doing this, you know, I kind of asked myself, what is it that bothers me so much about my mom acting immature and childish? And I realized that what bothered me so much was that I never got to be a child. She took away my right to have those feelings and those emotions. And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh, here I am my whole life, having not been able to be a child because my mom wouldn't allow it. And here I am as an adult, adamantly putting down and not allowing my inner child to exist. It's like, well, shit, you know? And all it took was sort of discovering it for me to realize, okay, you know, I can change this. And I have. Learned how to allow myself to have immature and childish feelings, and how those are acceptable, and to kind of parent myself through it. And an example is that I went on a trip to Haiti and I bought all of this jewelry for friends to, you know, bring back home and hand out to them. And when I was coming back, when I got home and laid it all out and looked at it, I decided that I wanted it. I wanted to keep all of myself, and I couldn't decide what pieces I wanted to give away, and I really wanted them. And my reaction is completely unacceptable. You are so selfish, and as a result, you have to give everything away, keeping nothing for yourself. That was my first reaction. And then my second reaction was, you know what? Keep everything then. If you want everything, you should keep everything, because that's what makes you happy, and your happiness comes first. And I said that to myself, and I just basked in that in that feeling, and I wore all of my jewelry pieces to work for a whole week, you know, different bracelets and earrings, and then finally, at the end of that week, I grew a little bit tired of all of it. You know, as children really do, I kind of got sick of it and decided that, wow, wouldn't it be nice if I could give these pieces away to people who I really care about and who I really love. And it was really interesting because then I got the privilege of giving a gift away, which was out of love and not self-guilt and shame. And it made me realize... And I could really only do this because I put myself first. And it made me realize how many times throughout my life I had had reactions and done things out of self-guilt and shame because I was not able to put myself first. And I think that what it really did was open up my understanding about the false self and what that means. And I had another run-in with it recently on the trip to Haiti as well. But Haiti itself is a really challenging environment to begin with, and I happened to be there with a group of donors, one of which was the COO and a very overbearing and demanding personality who just had me paralyzed by fear. It was like, he's the type of person who just, in general, if he says jump, you know, you jump. So I was literally on the edge of my seat the entire trip trying to figure out how I can please him, you know, and how I can be exactly what he needs me to be and what he wants. And as a result of this, I was kind of becoming more and more removed from my true self. So I was answering questions without thinking. I was saying things that weren't true, that I didn't really believe that I wouldn't say if I was in my right state of mind. And I think I was noticing also the physiological behaviors and mannerisms that come along with living in that realm of fear. So things like my hearing became really muffled. Like I couldn't hear people very well on the trip, and I was constantly saying, what? What? You know, and then my memory was just completely gone. And all of that, of course, was feeding my critical parent, you know, was just giving my critical parent ammunition to just be battering me down. And the whole trip, it's like I couldn't stay present because I was saying things like, why don't you know who that band is? Why can't you figure out how, you know, this health model works? Why didn't you know the answer to that question? And I was making lists of things that I had to study when I got home on my phone. And it was really difficult. And I'm almost at my 1 year mark in this program. And I don't know, it kind of felt like, oh, I've come so far and I really figured this out. And it was really and it was really difficult to go through this challenging period when I felt like my false self and my critical parent was really running the show. And I got back from Haiti and was really resistant to turning it over. I don't know if anyone's felt that way, but it's like I felt like I deserved to be punished more by it, so I held on to it. And I kind of avoided meetings at that time too, you know. And then finally, one night, I'd replayed it a lot in my head, and one night when I was meditating, I said, okay. I said to myself, okay, how would you have done this differently? And I played out some of the scenarios having as if I was my true self, having boundaries and pausing after something was said before answering in a response. And I kind of essentially did what I'd done in my visualization, which is I went back and I sort of repaired the situation. And I changed those things that I would have changed. Instead of going back and repeating the exact situation and punishing myself for it, I made those changes that I would have if I was my true self. And then I cried. I mourned the loss of getting to be my true self in those moments. And I let myself feel the hurt of that and the upset of that. And then my higher power said, okay, now that's enough. You know, this doesn't deserve to hurt you any longer. And at that point, I was able to turn it over, you know, to let it go. And I don't know how much time I have left. I'm almost at the end of what I'd planned to share. Oh, dear, I spoke quickly. But I think that one of the most incredible things about this program really is that it teaches you, it gives you those tools to understand and to really see the dysfunction that happened, that took place around us growing up. And it gives you the space and the time to turn inward, you know, and to really trust yourself and to find yourself and to find ways to really heal through that. And it is definitely a work in progress. And one of the things that I so admire is just willingness, you know, that all of us come here with willingness every day. It's the willingness to change, and I don't know how that change is going to take place, and I've found myself just over and over again in situations where I have no idea what the solution is. And of course we don't. If we knew what the solution was, we would be doing it. You know, we wouldn't be coming back here every day. But I have the willingness to try. I have the willingness to be available and open to the solution. The willingness to change. After living my life for 28 years one way, I have to keep reminding myself that I can't change all of those characteristics and those behaviors in just a year. And like was said earlier in the reading, that at the very least, I need to repeat the length of time that I was in that dysfunctional environment before. Before I can even consider being recovered. But this is such an incredible and beautiful program, and I've gone through such a transformation, and I feel such a solid sense of self for the first time in my life. And I'm now able to do things as my true self and to show up for friends not how I think they want me to act and behave and be, but in a way that makes me happy and that is genuine and true to myself. So I'm really unbelievably grateful for that and grateful for all of you for being here tonight. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.